The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Oh, are we live? Oh, I think we are. Hour number two, Sports Talk 1240, this beautiful Sunday night, November the 5th, 2016. Some people are hoping it's 2012 because if you listen to either side of the political climate, the world's going to end in 2 days. We don't care. We are here to talk New York sports. And if you're a fan of the Jets or the Knicks, well, the world feels pretty much over anyway. But first, the introductions. I'm Unkwa Sonya. Sitting across from me, Raymond Mora. You've got us from 9 until 10 to finish off the second hour of Sports Talk 1240. Daryl Slater, the Jets beat writer from NJ Advanced Media, will join us at 9:10. Keith Schlosser from SNY's Knicks blog will join us at 9:40. But I tell you, I thank God for Bill Donahue for a couple reasons. Number one, his hour of the show is also entertaining. You get to hear from a lot of good people from around the sports world. The second reason is because he gave the Jets exactly the amount of attention they deserved in that first hour. He said, nothing to see here, folks. Move along. Unfortunately, we have a bit more hashing out of that to do because, my goodness, you would think that a team that's still on the outside looking in would manage not to drop a game to a hapless Miami team. And yet, Ray, here we are.
Yeah, here we are indeed. And let me tell you something about this game. First of all, this is like one of the most embarrassing games I've ever seen as a Jet fan because there were so many opportunities where they could have closed this a long time ago, but they kept, you know, trying to make touchdowns and Fitzpatrick throwing picks as he always does and Brandon Marshall always dropping passes and complaining. And to be quite honest with you, I'm kind of glad they lost this game because I think this is the time for Bryce Petty to play quarterback.
He did go 2 for 2.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, that was nothing, that possession. I mean, they thought Fitzpatrick was, like, done or just needed to be in the sideline for a while.
But here's what kind of baffles me about the entire situation. For those who do follow me on Twitter, at @n_ASONYE, I had to spell it out because, you know, I do have Matt Forte on my fantasy team. And I said as much. As a fantasy owner and a Jets fan, I'm a little intrigued.
Well, Tata,
he had 12 carries for 92 yards and only one touchdown.
Which is
my question, especially since Fitzpatrick went 17 of 28 for 193 yards, only one score and two picks.
Typical.
Why not just keep the ball in Matt Forte's hands if he's having such success?
Well, there's something called ego, and I think Fitzpatrick has an ego where he thinks he's got to be a gunslinger and Brett Favre himself in way to wins, and he can't do that because he has no arm strength.
You know, I think that's a little unfair.
And for the record, I did have Forte on my fantasy team too, but I still lost. I had Brandon Marsh on my other fantasy team, and he failed me miserably.
Well, he's been failing everybody miserably.
Which is sad.
Everyone really bought into the whole Fitzmagic thing. I almost want to go back to last year because that's when we as Jets fans really thought, that's the cult hero. He's going to take us to the promised land. He hasn't done anything of substance his entire NFL career, but because it's New York, he's finally going to get it right. And the cycle of Fitzpatrick continues.
Yep.
He has a good year. They give him a contract. He's terrible again.
Have you noticed, though, that he's thrown 11 interceptions in the half, in the second half? That's more than I don't think anybody's ever done it in the second half of the season of any quarterback.
And the worst part about that is the second half is actually when you need your quarterback to have better reads. That's when your quarterback needs to take the adjustments from the first half and apply them to the second half.
But here's the problem. We know what Fitzpatrick is, but the Jets don't. So I don't know why they're not changing quarterbacks when they're 3-6 right now. And Bowles in the press conference was saying that Fitzpatrick is the guy if he's healthy. But we don't know for sure by tomorrow's MRI results. But to be honest, I put Petty in there.
So, for the Jets to equal last year's mark of 10-6, with which they missed the playoffs because they blew it against Buffalo, they now need to win out. I think we can safely assume that that's not going to happen.
No, and I think they might lose against the Rams next week. I wouldn't be surprised about that.
I mean, the Rams are a mess of their own.
They are.
But back to the whole Fitzpatrick debacle. You have already planned to pay this man $12 million. You might as well play out the string, which is sad. But you've put yourself into this point.
You got to be kidding me if you're going to say we're going to play Fitzpatrick for the rest of the season because of money.
Well, what other choice do you have?
Bench him.
And do what? If you are already out of it, you might as well just run it out until it's intolerable. It's not sad to say it's not intolerable now because he keeps getting the ball. Bryce Petty only came in late. I don't even know why, to be honest with you. Can you tell me?
Because they assumed that Fitzpatrick was injured, but then he was out for possibly only two plays, and then he came back in the next.
So you see what I mean? It took Fitzpatrick being physically unable to perform under center for Bryce Petty to even see the field. So unless something totally untenable happens, and apparently throwing six interceptions isn't untenable enough. Six interceptions in one football game. Not over a span of two or three in one. Apparently that wasn't bad enough to warrant a benching.
See the one thing.
So I'd really like to just play it out until it's awful. Then everyone can walk into the offseason with their tail between their legs, and someone else can finally take the reins.
See, I will agree with that, but the problem is that we don't know who the quarterback of the future is. We know for sure Fitzpatrick's not coming back next season. So they have to play Petty or Hackenberg to figure out who's going to be the future of this team. In the 3-6 right now. So what's the point? You don't have to lose right now. I mean, they win games, then we know that maybe Petty's the guy or not, but we got to know for sure.
And the crazy thing about it is, mathematically, huge asterisks. Mathematically, they still have a shot, but as I mentioned literally minutes ago, they have to win out just to equal their record from last year.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
So, as far as I'm concerned, you might as well wait until you're out of it and then put them in.
No, but they know they're out of it. I mean, look at their schedule, man. They got to face the Rams, then they go on their bye week, and they got to face the Patriots twice, which they haven't done, and Brady back, he's probably just going to throw five touchdowns on them and 50 points mostly by Belichick. I mean, it's kind of laughable to say that the Jets are going to make the playoffs. The only way they make the playoffs is they suddenly just win seven straight. That's not going to happen.
Isn't it funny that the worst case scenario of this season is actually happening right now? Because think about it. The prospect of facing the Patriots twice after the bye week already is bad.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have a fired up Tom Brady. You have the Patriots continuing to do what the Patriots have done to the AFC East, dominate.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And now you have a quarterback situation with arguably one of the most talented group of skill players the Jets have had this decade, I would argue. Because the only time you could even think about the Jets having really good skill players, albeit old-ish and veteran-like, was the year of Braylon Edwards, Antonio Holmes, and then that rotation in the backfield.
Yeah.
And then Thomas Jones, I will never remember why they let him go again, because his first year with the Jets, rushed for 1,000 yards, when the Jets had no business being in the AFC Championship game, boom, there he was. But the Jets haven't had skill players like this in quite some time. Now they have them, and no quarterback to feed them.
Yeah, for sure.
And speaking of the no quarterback to feed them, don't take my word for it. Ask Daryl Slater, the Jets beat writer for NJ Advanced Media, who joins us tonight. Daryl, Unqua, and Ray here in Long Island. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, how you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on. So I will leave this one totally in your hands. What is going on with the Jets right now?
They're terrible at playing the sport of football.
Simple enough, I guess.
I think, you know, look, you looked at this team earlier this year and saw 1-5, and those five losses were to some pretty good teams. But, you know, today they lose to a team that was mediocre, and the Jets are finding new ways to lose. I mean, obviously everyone saw the kickoff return for a touchdown after the penalty on Antonio Allen. So, look, this team is in the long run of the season, it's going to be average at best, you know, 7-9, maybe. But considering expectations, a total failure for this season, and the reasons are multifold.
you know, the sad part about it is coming into this year, there was still a feeling of optimism because the Jets had finished 10-6. They finally took a step forward. How sinking is this feeling that the season, for all intents and purposes, is pretty much over?
Yeah, I think you just have to look at Brandon Marshall after the game to kind of see the feeling that this locker room has right now, and then surely that, you know, the fan base too. There was a lot of expectations coming off 10-6, and they almost made the playoffs, as you know, that they would go ahead and break through and make it this year for the first time since 2010. You know, Brandon Marshall looked like, you know, someone killed his dog after this game. He looked so down, and you know, who can blame the guy? He's never played in the playoffs. He's having a poor year. He knows the clock's running out in his career, and they're not going to make the playoffs this year, most likely. And yeah, it has to be absolutely deflating. I mean, this team had flaws coming into this season, but I think with the issues of the secondary is something people didn't envision. The enormous regression of Ryan Fitzpatrick is something that people didn't envision, even though everyone kind of knew coming out of last year that he wasn't, he wasn't a great player, even though he looked great at times last year because of the talent around him. The Decker injury hasn't helped. So it's just been a perfect storm of bad things for the Jets.
I'd like to go to Matt Forte for a brief second because, again, we see the numbers, 12 rushes, 92 yards, and a score. What's been your take on how Matt Forte has looked this season, and why haven't the Jets put the ball more into his hands, at least today?
Yeah, look, I mean, today they would have won this game if they didn't give up that kickoff return, probably. Not necessarily, but if they didn't give up that kick return touchdown. They came back after those Ryan Fitzpatrick interceptions, and he actually threw a touchdown pass to Jaylen Marshall. So, but in terms of the involvement of Matt Forte, they want to ideally establish the run and not have Ryan Fitzpatrick throw a lot of passes. That is their ideal game plan for winning and their ideal plan for succeeding on offense. And Forte has had mixed results. You know, I think at times he's looked old and slow, but today he looked very decisive, great vision. He had a nice burst through the hole on that run, and I think the Jets should be encouraged by what they saw today, but look, it's probably too little too late at this point for the season. But ideally they would like to give him the ball more. What did he have, 12 carries? Is that right?
That's it, just 12.
Yep. Yeah, wow. So he had like 73 yards in the first half on maybe 7 carries or something, but that's a low number. Ideally they would like to give him the ball more, but remember they were down for, you know, a decent chunk of that second half. They had to kind of work their way back into the game. So that's kind of contributed to the lack of his carries he's had this year because they've been losing. They've had to throw the ball more to kind of get back in games.
Darryl, you know, I look at the secondary of the Jets, and I have to say this. Bowles has done a terrible job because they've been giving up big plays after big plays. Even though they did stop the run today, sort of. But what can we say about Bowles as a head coach?
Look, I mean, I don't think the Jets are going to get rid of Todd Bowles after this season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's safe. I think, you know, teams that change quarterbacks constantly are quarterbacks. Yeah, that too. But frequently, you know, typically aren't the better teams in the league.
Yeah.
So I think barring a complete meltdown and losing the team, yeah, he'll be back next year. But he's shown flaws, hiccups as a head coach this season, certainly. You know, whether it's the decision to punt in Pittsburgh from midfield and the 4th-and-1 that everyone knows that. And whether it's the failures of the secondary, you know, for a guy who's a former secondary coach in Bowles, and, you know, you had Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson bench for the first quarter today. All he would say Bowles was, coach's decision. Look, it was pretty clear that those guys, it was a disciplinary thing of some level, you know, probably minor to be benched for the first quarter. So, you know, you don't want, ideally want that to happen, two of your better players doing something, presumably, that results in them getting benched for a quarter. So last season Bowles pulled this team out of a 5-5 hole. They won 5 straight games. The schedule was weaker yet last season. Absolutely, yes, that's true. But he weathered a lot of storms last year, whether it was Geno Smith getting punched, whether it was, you know, the summer disaster that was Sheldon Richardson's weed suspension and the arrest that followed. So I think the jury is still out on him, all told, of what kind of coach he is in terms of being successful and all that. But the bottom line is wins. And right now, you know, he's, 13-12 in his tenure with the Jets. 10-6 last year, 3-6 this year.
But what's his obsession with starting Fitzpatrick? Look, we know what he is. I mean, everybody in the world knows what he is, and yet he keeps throwing him in there, and the 3-6. And, you know, for sure, we don't know that is official, but he said it today. He might change his mind by Wednesday. But why does he want to start Fitzpatrick knowing that the season's probably over?
Yeah, no, I think you raised a good point there. Like, so after the game, he said they're sticking with Ryan Fitzpatrick. But, you know, he said the same thing in Arizona. After, you know, and then he benched Fitzpatrick that week. Obviously, the huge difference being that Geno Smith is not available right now.
Yeah.
And that Bryce Petty is still very, very green. And they're, Christian Hackenberg is nowhere near ready. Yes, I think, you know, with maybe a couple more losses, they'll go with Petty. I think it sends, you know, 3-6, and you basically, and you, if you bench Fitzpatrick and you go with Petty, look, this team is not making the playoffs, but they're not technically mathematically out of it. You know,
yeah.
They win 7 straight games, 10-6. So if you're in that locker room and your coach at 3-6 benches your starting veteran quarterback in favor of a guy who, Bryce Petty, who had never before today played in a regular season NFL game, and he got 4 snaps today, what kind of message does that send? You know, Bowles is trying to win games here, and, you know, that's what these guys get paid to do, even though I think, ultimately, for the Jets, it would be better for them if their season continued to tank because they would get a better draft pick. I mean, this is a team that constantly, frequently has been in the middle of the first round, and that you really cannot get a quarterback in there. Not to say there's necessarily a sure thing quarterback next year, but Petty's not out of the question at some point. But I just think right now, if he does that, I would be really interested to see how that's received in the locker room, and I don't think it would be received well.
We're talking to Daryl Slater, Jets beat writer for NJ Advanced Media. You can follow on Twitter at Daryl with 2 R's and a Y, Slater, all one word. Daryl, I've got to ask about Geno Smith, because how unlucky of a couple of years has he had? And do you think if he was healthy, he would play over Fitzpatrick next week?
Well, I mean, you got to kind of separate the two things. Last year, not necessarily a lack of luck. I mean, what happened, he got punched in the face by a teammate who, you know, you should never hit anyone. But the reason that happened, obviously, is because, you know, Geno Smith did something to put himself in that situation, which was, you know, he didn't pay back to the guy, Kanan Bali. So that's, you know, that's one of those things where I don't think Geno Smith obviously could have foreseen that happening, but, you know, he sort of put himself in a bad situation there. And he's put himself in bad situations throughout his career. Now, totally independent of that is the fact that he tore his ACL this year, which was a horrible stroke of luck for him. I mean, he had not started since the 2014 finale here in Miami, right near where he grew up, right by the stadium in Miami Gardens. And he was, you know, he showed some potential in that 2014 finale. Remember the perfect quarterback rating, and then he finally gets a chance to start against the Ravens a couple weeks back, and he tears the ACL. So that is terrible luck right there. Some of the things that have happened in his career besides that are negative were things that he kind of brought on himself. Now, in terms of, yeah, he'd be starting still. If he was healthy, he would be starting, absolutely. I mean, they benched Ryan Fitzpatrick for a reason, and this team it's clear they've moved on from Fitzpatrick. He's not back next year. He's a free agent. They're not going to re-sign him. And Geno Smith's contract up, so he's not going to be back next year. So where do they go from here at quarterback? It's the big question of the offseason.
With the Jets somehow always seeming to have history with Miami, do you think that they, in fact, are the Jets' bigger rival instead of New England, or is it New England Jets over any AFC East matchup?
I guess how you term rivalry. I mean, the Patriots, for the most part, have gotten the better of the Jets. They've gotten the better of most teams they've played. But I think that the Jets-Patriots thing is a bigger rivalry just because, you know, New York-Boston, the fact that, you know, Belichick and all his history with the Jets, you know, the things that have been said, mainly going back to the Rex Ryan era about the Patriots and, you know, snipping here and there between the two teams. You just don't have that as much really at all with the Dolphins. Of course, Brandon Marshall, Byron Maxwell, I guess a little tiff there, but I mean, it's not like Byron Maxwell's an entrenched Miami Dolphin by any means. So, yeah, I think Jets-Patriots is a bigger rivalry. But the Jets obviously have not been able to have much success against the Patriots, and they haven't won up in New England since that, you know, that divisional playoff win after the 2010 season. It seems like an eternity ago, but you're talking about January 2011, the last time the Jets won in New England. That, you know, then they lose the AFC Championship game right after that, and pretty much everything has been downhill really since then, since that point.
Darrell, I have to ask you this. Gut feeling, and you could be as honest as you can with this. If Fitzpatrick stinks it up again in the first half next week against the Rams, and probably he will because that's a pretty solid defense, will we see Petty in the second half?
Gosh, that's a tough call. I don't think so because I think it'll be a close enough game at halftime because the Jets, you know, the Jets, I think, should be able to do pretty well defensively against against Keenum. Right, he's still playing quarterback out there for the Rams. So,
yeah.
yeah, so he's not very good either. So I would expect a low enough scoring first half that the game will be close. So they're not going to turn the game over to Petty in the second half. And then also, the factor being the Rams have such a fantastic defense, you want to throw this guy out there who's a developmental guy in that situation. I think you'll see Bryce Petty at some point after the bye. I think they're not going to throw him out there post-bye in the first game post-bye against New England, too tall of an order. I think win or lose next week, the Jets put Fitzpatrick out there after the bye against the Patriots, and then presuming they lose that game, they'll go forward, I don't guess, with Petty after that. So they're 3-6 right now, so
yeah.
They're going to the bye 3-7 or 4-6, and I don't see them winning. I don't see them winning against the Patriots, so they're either getting their 7th or 8th loss there in that game, and that pretty much buries you against, with that 7th or 8th loss against the Patriots, regardless what happens next week.
So you're saying that even if he throws 4 interceptions in the first half, they still won't take him out?
Maybe.
Yeah, look, I think that could happen if he throws 4 interceptions in the first half. But staying within the realm of what's probably likely, which is probably an average to pedestrian performance against a really good Rams defense, again, I think the score will be close enough at halftime, just kind of spitballing and looking at it now, that they'll stay with them for the second half. But you never know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of you never knows with this.
That's true.
Darrell, we'll let you go on this one. Who's got the, let's call it, more compelling, air quotes abound, quarterback controversy? The Jets or next week's opponent, L.A.?
Who has got a more compelling quarterback controversy, the Jets? I mean, in terms of, like, if you're just an NFL fan on a whole, like, if you just take a step back and look at the whole NFL, I think it's pretty clear what's going on with the Rams. Jared Goff is their quarterback of the future, and, you know, they're just waiting until he's ready, and he's going to be the guy. So I don't necessarily know if there's – now, this is a Rams team that – what is their record now? They got up to a 3-1 start. Didn't they? They win today, or –
They did not win, did they?
No, they lost against the Panthers.
So they've kind of slipped after that 3-1 start. So they're not a playoff team. They wouldn't be a playoff team probably with Jared Goff. They're playing it smart. They're sitting a young guy. Eventually he's going to play probably at some point this season. But I guess to me the Jets is more compelling because there's a huge unknown out there. Like, is Petty the quarterback of the future? Well, you know, maybe, maybe not. Did they reach on Hackenberg? Well, you don't know. There's a lot of questions that the Rams have already answered. They have a guy in the number one pick who they want, going forward, a guy who was highly regarded coming into the, out of the draft. And so the questions have all really been answered with the Rams. So the Jets, there's just so many questions, like who's going to be the quarterback next year? Will it be Petty? Well, you know, how much can Hackenberg develop? Tony Romo maybe going to be their quarterback. Yeah. Should they go for a guy like Mike Glennon? There's just like, there's a million questions, so to me that's more compelling. I don't think either team necessarily has a controversy per se because, with the Rams, it's all pretty cut and dry what's happening out there. And with the Jets, they don't have any good options. They have no good options. So it's not like they're not winning with any of these guys. So they're just going to play out the string just like the Rams will, and at least the Rams have some light at the end of the tunnel, maybe with Jared Goff. The Jets have just a ton of question marks at the end of the tunnel.
That's well put. Darrell Slater, Jets beat writer for NJ Advanced Media. Again, follow him on Twitter at Darrell Slater with 2 R's and a Y. Darrell, thank you so much for your time tonight, and we'll be hearing from you hopefully soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
Once again, Darrell Slater, Jets beat writer for NJ Advanced Media. I mean, I think he was totally right. Controversy was the wrong word. Oh, quarterback storyline might have been better, but even so, the story on the New York Jets seems to be written already.
Sorry of a franchise if you think about it, because the Jets haven't had a good quarterback since Joe Namath. And it's funny because Joe Namath threw more picks than touchdowns.
Here's your well actually moment. Chad Pennington does not get the credit he deserves.
But he was good.
Chad Pennington really doesn't get the credit he deserves, because people forget that without the shoulder surgeries, his vision was good.
Yeah, he was really
and
with, good.
Again, without the shoulder surgeries, his arm is a lot better. He commanded the huddle, and he took the Jets to the playoffs a couple of times. And he reinvented his career in Miami, which says that he had more left in the tank when the Jets let him go.
Well, he was also number one all time, I think, in completion percentage career-wise. I think it's him, DeBreeze, and I believe it's Rodgers. I don't know. He slipped out probably right now because Rodgers has been struggling. But Pennington was good. But I'm saying in terms of longevity and understanding this is a quarterback-driven league, the Jets haven't had that in a long time.
Well, I mean, it's always been a quarterback's league. I would argue at least mid-90s onward, it became the quarterback league. And with the advanced rules in 2010 and onward, it became the NFL that we know and love. Cue the sarcastic emoji face. But I really think that the Jets, I've been hashtagging it for the last couple of weeks. I've been spelling it wrong, I found out, sadly enough. But lose for Lamar, it would be the reach of all reaches. He may not even be the answer, but at this point, there's nothing to be gained from going 10-6 anymore.
It isn't. And to be honest, yeah, I look at Fitzpatrick right now, he reminds me of a poor man's Brett Favre. Because he has no arm strength.
That's not even fair to Brett Favre.
He has no
Brett Favre should show up and really give you the business right now.
But he always has fun out there.
I would be insulted to hear that if I was Brett Favre. I'm not even Brett Favre, and I'm insulted to hear that.
But you got to look at it in terms of he wants to throw it all the time, even though he's got
so
like four picks.
So does every other quarterback. That doesn't make him Brett Favre. What made Brett Favre Brett Favre is that despite the interceptions, he still set crazy records.
Yeah.
And he was still he's still a top-five generational quarterback.
But come on, man. Six interceptions?
That
was in my head that he threw six interceptions, okay? That just boggles in my head. And I'm just thinking, if you're a quarterback and you throw the fifth one, I don't think I'm going to throw anymore after that. Like, seriously.
Well, I don't think as a quarterback your next thought is, crap, the next pass I'm going to throw is going to be an interception.
Yeah, but your confidence is probably dropped after the fourth one.
Doesn't matter. You get paid to play. So
he gets paid to throw picks. They're telling me that. He's getting paid to throw picks.
Thank you for taking what I said and totally twisting it. What I'm saying is you get paid to play. So if your number is called, you have to deliver.
All right, let's all get excited for Fitzpatrick out there on the field. Let's all get excited for him throwing six interceptions in the game, because that's what we want.
Nobody's asking Fitzpatrick to throw these interceptions, and you know this. You're just being difficult.
No,
anyway,
no,
that's enough of Fitzpatrick.
He stinks.
That's enough of the Jets.
Get off the team.
That's enough of New York football today.
Let's just cut him right now. Let's just cut him right now and just start petty. That's what I would do. I'm done with this guy.
And this is why
this guy stinks.
And this is why you're not Mike Maccagnan. Look, let's go to break. When we come back, Keith Schlosser from SNY's Knicks blog will join us. You should too. Back here on Sports Talk 1240 after this.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
So, Raymond Mora, I'm Lukwa Sonya, by the way. Welcome back to Sports Talk 1240.
Oh, God.
On your radio dial at 1240 a.m. right here on Long Island with us. Tower also in Freeport, New York, and also always online at am1240wgbb.com. This fool, during the break, had the audacity to dub himself the Cam Newton of the show because he's wearing a fedora and he has positioned... Oh, I love this. He has positioned his over-ear studio monitors over said fedora. So his fedora actually kind of looks like a wet winter hat right now.
Check out my Snapchat at Mornis10 and you'll find out that I have been wearing that.
Please don't. Because you're in, because then you'll encourage him. This is nonsense.
Look, if I were Cam Newton, I would say this right now. If I was with the Jets, this is disgraceful and embarrassing, man.
If the Jets had Cam Newton, they wouldn't be 3-6.
No, he would probably be hurt then. He'd be hurt like five sacks. A game.
No, he might actually get calls if he played for the Jets.
No, you kidding me? He would get calls for the Panthers.
He might actually get calls because New York is New York and North Carolina.
No, he would get calls if he was in New England, and you know that. You know
that
for a fact.
Everybody knows that.
Not for a fact.
Matt Castle got calls when he was in New England.
Exactly.
Hashtag all sacks matter. So,
why'd you say
let's go to basketball. I've had enough of football right now.
Cam Newton's here, though.
The New York...
Okay, okay.
So, the New York Knicks, they took on the Utah Jazz. Some Butler grad named Gordon Hayward that went to the national championship game.
Why are you saying some Butler grad?
Sarcasm.
Okay, I'm just
it's
saying.
A literary tool.
Oh, I'm just. I thought you were frustrated because he was scoring. He had 20.
Listen, Gordon Hayward is an emerging player, by far the best player on the Jazz,
and a Knick killer.
He made it. He is. He made a season debut. Jazz beat the Knicks 114-109. And listen, I am all for what the Knicks did in the offseason, but it seems like the trend that has plagued the Knicks since the early aughts and beyond continues to be the case. It's that the ball doesn't move. I'm dead serious. And in a way, it's because of the moves that they choose to make. Carmelo Anthony, still a top 20 NBA player, but he needs the ball to be successful. Derrick Rose is his point guard, former MVP, who dominated the ball to be successful. Your best player, watch me now, I didn't say he was a better player than Melo, but on this team, as constructed, your best player, your best option, whom you should play through, is Kristaps Porzingis, and he doesn't get the ball.
Oh, no. No joke. It should be Kristaps Porzingis. I mean, you look at him when he scores. I mean, he scores effectively when he gets the ball. But the problem is they don't give him the ball, and they give him the ball this game. But then against the Rockets, they didn't give him nothing because he only had four. And then Harden was just scoring at will again, like he always does against the Knicks. And then Friday, they had a nice win against
Chicago.
Everybody
scores at will against the Knicks. The one thing that was
point guards do.
The one thing that was definitely not addressed, aside from the pickup of a Joakim Noah, who hasn't really been healthy since 2012.
Yeah.
They haven't really addressed defense. By the way, as Ray mentioned, this guy, Kristaps Porzingis, not only did he take less shots, how many less shots did he take?
Well, two.
He took four shots.
Well, yeah, that
the
game,
whole
yeah.
game.
Yeah.
Derrick Rose took 18. Carmelo Anthony took 15. Courtney Lee took 12.
Yeah.
Are you serious? And I respect Courtney Lee. I like his game. When he emerged for the Magic on their run to the finals, I didn't think much of him then, but I respect the player he is now. But for you to tell me, even though this was on Wednesday, for you to tell me that he's taking 12 shots while Kristaps Porzingis, your number 4 overall pick, is taking 4?
Your future of the Knicks, too. He's taking only 4 shots. What does that mean to us? Well, it means one thing. It means Melo's a ball hogger and Derrick Rose doesn't know what the hell he's doing on the court sometimes.
This can't for me, this can't fall on Melo. This can't fall on Melo. If you're a point guard, you're supposed to run the offense.
But if you're a leader, you would tell your point guard to run it through Porzingis.
Yes and no. Yes and no. I don't know. I feel the need always to defend Melo because I think Melo gets a bad rap sometimes, undeservedly so. Sometimes he deserves it. Other times it's been unfair because, A, it's New York, and, B, that you're asking him to do a lot on a team that really doesn't have a lot. But you do have a point about making the emphasis that Porzingis should definitely get the ball more. And at least it was addressed in some fashion.
Yeah, the coach had to air it out there. That's the only way the team can understand. But they know, the team understands. I mean, Rose is a smart guy. Noah's a smart guy. Lee's a smart guy. They know. They want to win. They don't want to lose. I mean, you think they want to be 2-4 right now?
But here's,
God, no.
But here's what's really important to address with teams, and we'll talk to Keith Schlosser in just a minute. I think what's important for folks to realize about teams in general, and by folks, that includes you and I, teams, it's very tough to get a team on the same page because everybody wants to win. But at the same time, people want to win on their own terms.
Yeah.
You'll get one person saying, yeah, we should definitely win out, but I should drop 30. One person says, well, I need the ball more. We should definitely win every game we're in, but I only get the ball on the post and nobody sees me when I'm out of the trying to stretch the perimeter. Guy on the bench says, I deserve to play more. I give more effort than all of these guys. And, well, that's just how teams are constructed. Speaking of teams, here's the third member of our team, at least for the second segment of the show, Keith Schlosser from SNY's Knicks blog. Keith, it's Unqua and Ray. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, how are you doing?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You saw the Knicks play against Utah. Did you see any regression? Rather, how much regression did you see from their win against Chicago on Friday and now their loss that we're talking about today?
Well, I think the biggest thing there was their inconsistency. You know, they obviously amassed a 14, double-digit lead in the first quarter. Kristaps Porzingis had 14 early points, and they looked like the same team. You know, the ball was moving. They were alert. They were sharing the ball, getting, most importantly, getting Kristaps Porzingis the ball. And then Porzingis kind of had 2 fouls. They had to sit him down. And from there on out, it kind of all went astray. You know, when he came back in, they couldn't get him the ball again. They didn't get him involved. So, you know, when Kristaps Porzingis goes, so do the Knicks. And when he doesn't, not so much.
You know, there are encouraging parts of this box score to me. And it is that, for the most part, the three main scorers were efficient at the very least. Carmelo went 12 for 20 from the field. Oh, of 6 from 3.
Yeah.
Kristaps went 10 of 18 from the field. And even Derrick Rose, who often has the ball in his hands, he went 7 of 14 from the field. Is that indicative of the way that the ball was moving offensively, or is it just because my turn, your turn type of basketball?
No, I think it's indicative of what can be. You know, the potential is there. Again, you really didn't see that consistent effort from, you know, start to finish. You know, like I said, Porzingis was hot early on when he sat down, when he didn't necessarily get the ball, Melo stepped up. And then by the fourth quarter, when the pressure was on, you know, obviously they lost the lead. Derrick Rose started to do what he should be doing, which is attacking the basket, you know, drawing fouls. And then when you go in, you open up opportunities for your teammates around you. So I don't necessarily think it's a thing of your turn, my turn, but I think it's a point of just communicating well and understanding, you know, who can make they can all make each other better.
Keith, I find it interesting from the crowd today. When Melo had the ball, he started dribbling, and then the crowd kept saying, pass the ball. I mean, you think Melo seems to be more of a willing passer in those situations, knowing that those isolation plays don't really are exactly, a short thing?
Yeah, I think he's got that mentality. I think he knows he can. You know, we obviously know he can be a good passer. Last year, he had a career high of 4.2. assists. And this year you turn around and you see all the support he has. You know, we talk about Porzingis, we talk about Rose. Joakim Noah has been really good, and he's had a couple of good offensive games. I think Melo needs to learn trust. You know, I think that he's gone so long without having the support he needs, and now that he does have it, I'm not really sure he knows how to utilize it just yet. I mean, we're only six games in, and, you know, they've got a new coach. They're obviously trying to get to know one another and learn each other's strengths and weaknesses, and Melo has to understand that, hey, you know, Phil Jackson has put the team in place that he needs to be successful. They've just got to understand one another.
Let's talk about Jeff Hornacek for a second. What is your early take of his Knicks career? Again, six games in, but what's your early take about the way he runs his team?
You know, I think we've seen positive signs. I think we're also going off of what the Knicks have had over the last couple of years, which, you know, when you look at Derek Fisher and Kurt Rambis from last season,
yeesh,
it really wasn't much. It was discouraging. You know, you sat there going, you know, he should be doing this, he should be doing that. You saw mistakes that the coaches were making, and they really weren't correcting them as the season went on. I think early on you're seeing Hornacek learn from him his mistakes or just learn from experience. You know, one thing I love about Jeff Hornacek is he takes charge really quickly. You know, if he sees something that he doesn't like on the court, he's quick to call a timeout. He stops the bleeding. He doesn't let it go on. So, you know, I'd like to think that this whole season isn't going to be a learning experience for them as a group. I hope that, you know, that the Knicks catch on, that they stop the collective bleeding sooner than later. That way they can compete for a playoff spot. But at the same time, you watch Hornacek and you see what he does, and he's kind of the reactionary guy, and you think this might take the entire season for them to catch on.
You know, offensively, look at this team and this potential there that they could score more than 100 points for sure. I mean, they score 109 points and they lost. But defensively, I mean, they just look like a disaster on the court. I think there's a lot of miscommunications. I think Melo at the wing, it's kind of a weak deep for him at that position because players are just attacking him. Like Gordon Hayward had 28 points and he was only 6 of 17 shooting. But you look at that, is there a way that they can address it in terms of possibly pulling Melo to the floor in some possessions?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think that all comes down to the matchups, and obviously, you know, I think, again, Jeff Hornacek is very good at substitutions. He's very good at adjusting certain things, so he's got to make those adjustments as the season goes on. You know, I think the communication is big. You know, we talk about it on the offensive end. It's just as much of a key thing for the defensive end as well. Joakim Noah's got to be that anchor. Today against Utah, he really wasn't playing too much, so he wasn't really able to assert himself. The Knicks actually put Steph's Porzingis in at the five to try and exploit the Utah Jazz defense down low. So you were kind of putting offense as the priority, and that they kind of suffered later on. But to answer your question, yeah, I think it's all going to come down to matchups and added communication as the season goes on.
Keith Schlosser from SNY's Knicks blog joins us here on Sports Talk 1240. Keith, when we look at the Knicks as a franchise, the highest of highs, the 54-win season, to the lowest of lows, I would even say not even last year, but the year before, what's the common thread that really goes through it all, and why are the Knicks, as presently constructed, stuck where they are?
You know, I think if you ask that question 3 months from now, we might be having a different conversation because I look at this group and, you know, Jeff Hornacek is a good coach. He's had success in the past, especially with underachieving or underrated groups. Obviously, he did it with the Suns. This group has to come together. You know, but as far as the last couple of years, Phil Jackson has obviously been the constant, and Phil Jackson has wanted to kind of feel his way through, you know, with this team. We've seen two different overhauls of this entire roster just in Jackson's tenure alone. I think this past summer, you know, he started to feel the pressure of the New York media, the New York fans, and frankly, Carmelo Anthony. He re-signed Carmelo Anthony and said, "You're my guy." Carmelo is sitting there. He wants to win. So I think over the past couple of years, Phil is kind of feeling out. He's obviously a first-time executive. This past summer, Carmelo said, "Hey, I want to win." And that's where you saw Jackson get some veterans and get Melo the support he needs to compete for a playoff spot.
You know, you look at this Knicks bench, though. I mean, that's like also one of the weakest links to the team. Is there any possibility that they're going to make an upgrade to the bench, maybe do a trade for a player, or are they waiting on somebody to just come out and make sure that he can be a consistent scorer? Because Brandon Jennings right now hasn't been that type of guy.
Well, you know, to give Brandon Jennings credit where it's due, he's been very unselfish. You know, he's been more of a playmaker than we've ever seen in his career, even early on. Great chemistry with Porzingis, great chemistry with you know, even Melo and some of the other bench players that are trying to find their roles. I don't know if this is the answer, but I did read Mark Berman of the New York Post report that the Knicks are ready to sign Jason Randall back when his rehab ends in Westchester in the D League. I thought Randall was great in preseason. You know, he's a scorer. He can attack the basket, much like Derrick Rose, much like Brandon Jennings. That style of play fits what the Knicks need from that point guard position. And I think he's going to upgrade the bench considerably when and if they do sign him. So that's something that I think Knicks fans should be looking forward to.
For Knicks fans not too familiar with the Stanford grad coached by Johnny Dawkins, can you fill in the fans a little bit about who Jason Randall is overall as a player?
Sure. I mean, you know, Nicole, you mentioned Johnny Dawkins and Stanford. Obviously, they play triangle principles there. So Randall has kind of come up with his basketball IQ in the style that Phil Jackson likes. He's, like I said, he attacks the basket. He's pesky as a defender. He's in your face. You know, and as far as the Knicks offense, he likes to get to the basket. And while that's good because a guy like that can obviously score, the more he attacks, the more he's going to open up for guys around the perimeter. And then he's got to be intelligent enough to make those passes. As a young player, you hope that he could catch on quickly. And the more he really, I guess, develops chemistry with his teammates. I saw it in preseason. I think he has the potential to do that. So I think he's going to be, like I said, a big upgrade on the bench, considering they really don't have much of an attack in that second unit.
You know, I look at the upcoming schedule, and there's three games that caught my eye. The Brooklyn game on Wednesday, then Boston and Toronto. Should the Knicks be able to go 2-1 against those teams?
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, I think that, again, you know, we keep talking about, you know, how early it is in the season, but I think there is a certain amount of pressure because, you know, they're 2-4 now. If they go 1-2, they're 3-6, you're going to look and say, oh, you know, they're going to create a bit of a hole for themselves. I think this team has talent. You know, they've got to prove it, though. They've got communication is a huge thing, and it would be a shame to let that talent go to waste. But I think the talent is there, and frankly, even at this early point in the season, the urgency is there. So those two things together could really lead them to a 2-1 finish over these next three games.
You know, it's always interesting to watch the Knicks and the Nets face off, especially in the year when they were even both a bit competitive. Do you see that sort of thing happening on Wednesday, or should one team, for many fans, hopefully the Knicks, taking control throughout all four quarters?
I think if you're a Knicks fan, you should be looking forward to the Knicks taking control. You know, I've seen some positive things here and there from the Nets, but they're not set to be competitive this year. You know, you talk about whether or not Jeff Hornacek is going to, you know, take the entire year to learn and kind of mold this team. I think that's what Kenny Atkinson is doing with the Nets this year, and the difference is it's expected. You know, he's got the time. He's got the vision from the Nets front office. They're going to take some time. They're going to figure things out, and they don't have the type of players that they can build around. They've got stopgap players as they – you know, maybe, you know, look towards the future. I think Jeremy Lin is a great fit for that team, but unfortunately he's going to be out 2 weeks with an injury and we won't see him on Wednesday night. So I think the Knicks should be able to take that one pretty easily.
So with that, I'll let you go. Even with Jeremy Lin still being injured, what kind of reception do you think he'll be treated to as soon as he either shows up on camera or fans eye him walking in? What kind of reception do you think he will have now that he's going to play cross town for the Brooklyn Nets?
You know, I don't really think that has much to do with the Knicks, with the perception of Knicks fans to Jeremy Lin. I think Lin is remembered for a great tenure in New York, as short as it was. I mean, no player has ever done what he's done before, not just for the Knicks, but on the NBA scale. I mean, he was a national phenomenon, and I think they appreciate that. And the way he ended his Knicks tenure was a little unfortunate, but in this NBA economy, even back then, that's kind of the way it goes. You know, somebody, you know, breaks through, he's ready to make his money, and the Knicks weren't really ready to commit to that. So I don't really think Lin had had much of a choice. He signed that offer with Houston, and that was kind of the end of the chapter. But I think fans can appreciate what he did while he was here.
Well said indeed. Keith Schlosser, again, from SNY's Knicks blog on Twitter. You can follow him at Keith B. Schlosser with two S's. Keith, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and here's to a good Monday.
Yeah.
No problem, guys. Anytime. Thanks.
Have a good night.
You too.
So that was by far one of the more fun Knicks interviews I've had. And, you know, people tend to be bullish about this team from time to time, but I tend to be hard on them because it's almost like PSTD. I don't want to trivialize that, so I'm going to find a different term. It's almost like a rewind of the same thing over and over again. The Knicks get your hopes up just to let you down.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm going to tell you this. Look, it's still early. Look, the Knicks are 2-4, but to be honest, I think I would have been fine if they were 2-4 because it's still a team that's trying to gel together into being something special. Now, a lot of people picked them to be out of the playoffs. I was one of those people that picked them that they should be in the playoffs and they should be in the Eastern Conference Finals, but we don't know for sure until the first couple games. You know, like 15, 20 games, we'll figure out what this team is and where they're going, because that's how long it took Miami, and probably that's how long it's going to take for the Warriors, too. They're kind of struggling as well.
I mean, I think that's a little bit different. Not too much, but it is a little bit different, because at the very least, you're adding one piece to an already strong Warriors team. For the Knicks, all these pieces are brand new, especially for Noah and Rose, who have had their injury woes for the past couple of seasons. But I think, as constructed, the jury's still out on how good this team can be.
The bench, though, is the key. Because they got to have to figure out how they got to have scoring off the bench. Because, you know, in that game today, when they were up by two and the bench came in, automatically 7 points were scored from the Jazz, and Horsham had to put in the starting lineup.
And that's more of an indictment on the second unit's defensive effort. Because I'm all for the starters doing what starters do. It's the NBA. It is what it is. But if you as a bench are given a lead at any juncture in the game, and all of a sudden the lead is gone, that's absolutely inexcusable. On every level. That means your reads weren't right. It means that your head wasn't in the game. And for all intents and purposes, it means that the other team licked their chops and took full advantage of what you didn't have instead of you playing to your strengths and forcing them to do something a little different.
Yeah, and that's things. But let's look at their schedule for the month of November. We already talked about Brooklyn, Boston, Toronto. Those are the next three games. Then you got Dallas, Detroit, Washington, Atlanta, Portland, Charlotte twice, Oklahoma City, and then Minnesota.
A home and home with Charlotte, by the way.
Yeah.
They have Charlotte at home, then they go to Charlotte, then come back home for OKC. Who wrote this?
Look at this. They got 7 home games and about 4 road games in November. You know, they got to win their games at home as well. They lost a game today that they should have won at home. You know, I give credit to the Utah Jazz. They fought back, and Gordon Hayward's always been a Knick killer for them, and Gobert, you know, he posterized Porzingis, and George Hill, you know, he's no pesk.
Gobert is 7'3". And I know George Hill isn't what one would call a high-caliber point guard, but he's really got to get his credit, especially during the Indiana years with a young Paul George, a then-still-effective Roy Hibbert. I mean, those Pacers teams were tough, and he was a big part of that. So
yeah.
I think his addition to Utah, and Joe Johnson for that matter, Utah's going to be a sneaky team this year.
I think they should be in the playoff team. I thought they should be a playoff team last year, but I think this year, I think they should be making it for sure. And they'll be kind of disappointed if they didn't.
I mean, the West is always going to be tough.
Yeah.
But as we wrap things up here, this November 5th edition, right before Election Day, for some reason on the outline, Ray wanted to know if we were going to talk politics. I said, absolutely not. However, and I don't know why I'm choosing to bring this up, but might as well do it. The great sports debate is happening tomorrow at Fordham University.
Yeah.
It's Michael Kay versus Don LaGreca. So I'd like to know, Ray, whom you are endorsing, whether it's Michael Kay, whether it's Don LaGreca, or you're writing in a third-party candidate.
I endorse LaGreca. I love LaGreca because he's, you know, the man of the people. That's all I can say there.
That's the best you've got.
What are you going to endorse Michael Kay?
I am endorsing Michael Kay.
Of course you endorse Michael Kay.
Because that's the best that the other side has.
Well, of course you're endorsing Michael Kay.
You're really going to tell me, oh, he's a man of the people. So what?
Michael Kay's not
anybody
a man of the people.
Anybody can be a man of the people. And you know what? You don't have to be a man of the people to be better at what you do.
Well, LaGreca, I think, is just as good as Michael Kay. I mean, he's the heart.
He's the heart of that team. Debatable.
Well, he's the heart
that's
of that team.
110% debatable, although I will mention that Michael Kay made some very off-color comments this past week that kind of made me feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, so, but still.
Something about an NFL there. Tie and I'm gonna leave it there.
I know.
It's the Lord's Day. I can't let this get any weirder.
I know. That's what he said. But you know, let's finish here about when we did a little politics talk.
No, we're not doing it. I'm telling you right now, we're not doing it.
Just one thing.
No,
we're not
doing it.
Who you voting for?
We're not doing it. We're not doing it. And I don't care.
I'm voting for Clinton.
I don't care.
Well, I care. I'm voting for Clinton.
Listen, if you have a vote, please go use it. If you feel like you don't want to use it, that's your right too. This is why America is America. Anyway, we definitely have to thank Daryl Slater from NJ Advanced Media for joining us. Thank you to Keith Schlosser from SNY's Knicks Blog for joining us. Thanking my trusty co-host Raymond Moore, and of course the man on the ones and twos, Mr. Brian Graves. We will see you next Sunday. You know what the deal is, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. every Sunday on your radio dial at 1240 a.m. and always online at am1240wgbb.com. Good night!
Cam Newman says good night.
Shut up! Get out!
Cam Newman says good night.
I checked it out!
'Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.